Hello and welcome to Between Two Karens. I'm Yochai.
Hi, I'm Brad.
Hi, I'm Sam.
And today, we're going to review The Lost City, for real this time.
That, you know, I felt like my chi was a little low.
How's it feeling now?
We did that after show, aka pre-show show. And now I feel, I feel invigorated.
I do too, actually. I feel like I'm really in the zone now. I think everything I say about The Lost City is going to be way more intelligent and informed.
Oh, you know what the thing is about, Olympic athletes is they got to stretch. You know what I mean?
We just
work out our hammies, so to speak.
Speak for yourself.
Stretch out them glutes.
I feel exhausted.
Okay, stretching.
Yeah, no, I just feel exhausted by 45 minutes of us talking. All right.
Says, stretching is a waste of time and resources.
No, stretching is
worth doing, you do it.
Very quick review. He's going to be mad.
No,
he was going to like it, but now he doesn't like it.
Yeah, it's true. You've used it up. That said, let's just, for folks who don't know, we did try to do this episode, but it didn't really work out. So it's an after show. You're welcome. And instead, we're going to try it again today. We're going to do a Gamer Blast from the past, reviewing The Lost City by Tom Moldvay. We have our good friend Sam Ameli, or AKA Skullboy, on the show to review it with us. Now,
it's a Gamer Blast from the past. Did you say that?
Yes, I think I did.
Review old modules.
Yeah, that's right.
Three guys, outsiders to the originals. We didn't read them. We weren't there. We're not as old as some people would believe. Right. We're kind of right in the middle. We weren't there for this when they came out the first time, but now we're catching up and we review them and it's a Gamer Blast. We're gamers and it's a Gamer Blast from the past because they are from the past.
Okay.
That is to say, before we were old enough to read.
The first episode that Yochai walks off of.
Yeah.
Just giving a little bit of introduction to what we're going to do.
It's good to have context.
I said it already.
You got a moot sack for us?
We do have. Both of you. Yes, this is my. We have distinct jobs on this show. My job is to say we have a moot sack question, and yes, we do. And I'm just going to read it because I'm afraid of what will happen if I don't.
So sorry.
let's hear it. Let's hear it. Start the questions. The moot sack. We got a question from the moot sack. The moot sack. Let's pull it out. The moot sack. That's what we call our mailbag. It's just a cute little name.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. This comes in from Outfoxing. Hey, guys. Got a question for the moot sack for you. TTRPGs and video games have a long history of borrowing mechanics, settings, and themes from one another, often to great success. Baldur's Gate is in parentheses. But sometimes not. D&D 4E is in parentheses. What is something that modern TTRPGs could borrow from video games and or vice versa that would play to the medium's strengths? I'm particularly thinking of the indie ends of the industries, but if the latest AAA game has something stealable, go for it.
Well, here we go. That's a question. Thanks for the question. That was the moot sack. Let's get on to the review.
Nope, that's not. We're going to answer it. We're going to answer it starting with our good friend Sam Ameli, who is the youngest and therefore most video game person.
I'm the most video game person in the room.
He's playing the Fortnite, he's playing the Roblox, he's playing the Minecraft, he's playing...
I had an alpha key to Minecraft when it first came out. I remember my friend sitting me down and being like, check it out, you got to punch this tree. That was incredible.
I played Alpha 1.6. I remember before that actually. It was different than other things. And then all the children showed up.
Yeah, well, you know, they ruined so many things.
Yeah, I remember when that was first coming out and I was like, this doesn't have any anime girlfriends in it. I'm not playing this.
So true. You were like, get back to my copy of Thousand Arms.
Yes, exactly.
For the PS1.
Dude, Thousand Arms, great game.
A game in which your magical blacksmithing is enhanced by going on dates with cute anime girls. Look it up.
God.
You want to talk about mechanics that need borrowing from...
Dating.
Yeah,
more dating.
There's plenty of story games.
Anime girlfriends. That's what tabletop role-playing games need.
When an RPG has in its description the word messy, like, yes, that's when it means it has to do with relationships, and I don't care. That said, Monster Hearts did a good job of that. So, why don't you give your ideas, Sam, on how role-playing games can learn from video games and or vice versa?
Yeah, so I have to say quickly that I disagree with one part of the question, in that I think fourth edition D&D was great. I just think that if you
friggin' rules,
you just had to call it something else. If you had called it anything else, people would have been all over it. If it was like, you know, a war game or a skirmish game or something like that, I think people would have been eating it up with a big spoon. I think there's a lot of cool stuff with 4E. I think the setting is kind of dope. It's like the kind of D&D setting that I like, all the points of light kind of stuff. This is all beside the point. I just had to say that because it was incorrigible 4E stan. In terms of things that I'm going to start, it's a difficult question because I think a lot of times, like, you see a lot of people railing against video game mechanics in tabletop role-playing games. And I think a lot of the things that people try to introduce are things that came from tabletop role-playing games to begin with. Like the idea of like randomly generated dungeons and like the generative like dungeon crawling game is like, that's original D&D in a lot of ways. Like there are rules codified in like OD&D for roguelikes basically, which I think is like a great, honestly, it's a great way to play D&D, and you get like some really interesting versions of that. Like Rasp of Sand, I think is a cool take on that.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
And I think you have like other games, like people will try. I think it's an interesting design exercise to like say, for instance, like there's the Dark Souls RPG. I don't know a lot about the Dark Souls RPG, but I can tell you already, I think didn't they like base it on fifth edition or something like that. You can correct me if that's in the,
I have no idea,
comment section later.
I didn't know they made an RPG of it.
They did.
Makes sense.
I think that I took it like when that happened, I remember talking to people in my Discord about like, how would you actually do this to like make like an interesting, like mechanically, like an interesting RPG based on Dark Souls. And like, you have to like examine themes and like stuff like that. Cause like,
yeah,
I think you could do a really cool Dark Souls RPG, but it wouldn't look like D&D. It'd have to be, you have to embrace loneliness in a way that RPGs, unless it's a solo RPG, you're not really doing a lot. And even then, like, I don't ever feel lonely when I'm playing a RPG. Mostly I feel great, cause it's amazing and I don't have to deal with any other people. But I think things like, you know, integrating, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I guess what I'm trying to say is a lot of times people try to put video game things in RPGs, except what they do is they just reskin fifth edition to be about their favorite video game. And I think that that's probably a lazy way of doing it. And that instead you should put microtransactions your tabletop role-playing games.
That was subtle.
I think in some ways, like, for instance, I maintain the opinion that AD&D first edition was Gary Gygax trying to not just cut Dave Arneson out of the equation, but also I think he really wanted to make an MMO before he really had an understanding of what that was. I believe that like the idea to like have a codified rule set and a shared universe and tournament play and all of these things happening simultaneously within the same world was like meant to be what essentially became, you know, something like EverQuest. And I think those kind of things interest me when it comes to like play styles and like play movements are really interesting to me in regard to like video games influencing tabletop games, because you could say something like, do you guys know about Blazeball?
No, I don't know what Blazeball is.
I do, through because of Quinns.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Blazeball, I think is something that is very video gamey and at the same time is very TTRPG, because it became basically like an art movement. It was just like this crazy, like, it's just like a fake baseball game, and it's like a management betting sim, basically, But like everybody was just like going hard on the lore of all their ridiculous teams, and people were making all these comics and stuff on it. And it's like, I guess that's the stuff that interests me most. Like when you have like really sparse video games that people like then make like a lot of content for like surrounding them. I feel like there's like this is a sort of abstract way of answering the question, I guess. But like, that's to me the thing that like is the best thing to carry over to tabletop games. And it's just hype. I guess it's just like being excited and like making a lot of stuff about like treating the game as like this like personal, like little project for yourself.
You're saying what you think role-playing games should take from video games is hype.
I think fandom. Like,
but just it has be a fan that.
Of, yeah, it doesn't. I
look at all the like Dimension yeah, I guess. 20 and those kinds. That's what that
I
is.
Guess. I guess it's sometimes, fandom. Yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know. This is, I think a lot of times, like it's difficult to like quantify like we have one mechanic for some, cause it's just like, I don't know. How about this? Here's a much more concise answer and you can just erase everything I just said before. You know, when you die, you come back to life. There you go.
Talking about Dark Souls, making Dark Souls the game. First of all, I haven't read Runecairn, but I heard that it kind of attempts to do a Dark Souls-y kind of game. Have you guys read Runecairn?
I read the original, not Warden Saga, but the original one. I mean, it has like this rebirth mechanic, and it was a one-on-one game originally, right, which is a pretty good idea.
Yeah,
You should. It's based on the Cairn SRD. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, I feel like I did know that.
And it has a lot more to do with the actual word Cairn in it, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's Colin Lesueur wrote that, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He writes good stuff. Shout outs to Colin Lesueur. Anyway, there's something there. I don't know. Dark Souls, I feel like the people, they get really bogged down about the, like they think it's all about the vibes, but I think the reason people play Dark Souls is that it's fun to move the little guy around. Like, I think it's just the way you control it is why it's fun. And like the fact that it's hard, but you have to like, I think Dark Souls has more in common with like Tony Hawk Pro Skater than it does with, I don't know, Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. Like, I feel like it is a game where you play to get better. You know, it's a game where you play to be able to pull off stuff that you didn't think you could do. And it's really hard to capture that mechanically in a tabletop game. I don't know how you would do that. It's a, you know, it's like Dark Souls. You try something, it doesn't work, you die. You try it again, it doesn't work, you die. You tweak the formula, you know, you get better, you get good, right? And then you see the freakiest thing in a different way. It gives you ways to explore creatively. It's extremely punishing, but I feel like the mechanics are like the thing that makes it special. It's the mechanisms of moving the little guy around. I don't know how to capture that in a tabletop game. I think it's probably something mechanically, though. I think it's making like a fun tactical game. And I have no interest at all in making like a tactical, like micro strategy game. You know what I mean? Like where you're manipulating characters in a way that feels fun, but fast, but punishing, but also not punishing because you can infinitely retry. That's, forget it. That's like the list of things why I think Dark Souls is fun, I think is absolute poison as far as things I would want to design in a tabletop game. So I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Let Dark Souls be a video game. I don't want to gamify it as a tabletop role-playing game. Yeah, that's what I think. You wanted to talk about video games that I think can be plundered. People have done this, but I think I haven't seen the definitive best answer is Monster Hunter. I love Monster Hunter. You go out, you kill the monsters, you take its body parts. Your body parts let you make cooler weapons that let you go fight bigger monsters. I think it really makes monsters as treasure an interesting mechanic. I think we need to see more monster, you know, manuals, bestiaries, etc., where it tells us what eating the meat will do to you, what, you know, the body parts can be used to craft. I don't think you can do this small. I don't think you can have like a zine that captures this. You need like a big, thick thing that details the ecology of these creatures, like the biology, the things, like a crafting system. Like it would need to be, I think, pretty big. And I haven't seen one that really, for me, does it in a way that Monster Hunter does it. But yeah, I think that that would make D&D a different experience for me if I look at monsters in terms of like not what they are preventing me from doing. Because I think that's how we see monsters in OSR. They are roadblocks to advancement. I want to see them not as bags of experience points that obstruct me from personally getting stronger. I want to see them as mineable resources that I can use to develop my world and open new doors. Yeah, like if I defeat this Tyrannosaurus Rex, its jawbone will allow me to possibly fight this other thing over here. Like that's, I don't think I've seen that in its final form yet. So that's my answer from that. Yochai, what do you have to say about this?
I can't think of any mechanics I really care about from video games that should be brought into tabletop games. I do really wish that there were more quote unquote OSR like games for video games. An example of that is like I see Breath of the Wild as a very OSR game. It's principally it principally involves exploration, discovery, problem solving, dangerous combat. There are aspects of it that are not OSR at all. Like your character is not randomly generated. They're not some no name. They're just a really important hero to the world. I'd love to see those four things I said, but attached to a game that doesn't have a titular important character in, well, I guess he's not in the title, but everyone knows he's the series character. Everyone knows Link.
He's the guy.
Yeah, he's the guy.
He's the little guy.
So have you guys ever played, there's a game called Below. You ever heard of Below? It's a PC game from many years ago. It's a very OSR like game. It's you just kind of, you're a dude with a torch exploring an island and it has permanent death. And, it's like fair, but difficult combat. It's top down isometric, whatever you call that. I want to see more of those kinds of games, but maybe not so dark. Like what I like about Breath of the Wild is it's not dark. It's like pretty happy. It's
really did you play Valheim at all?
No, I haven't.
Valheim, I think
is Vikings. Is a Vikings game?
It's Vikings. I think it's like incredibly OSR in its approach to things. It's survival game with like lots of building stuff.
Yes, I remember watching a trailer of it where these like peasants are making a wooden house or something. There's like
you can build a town or something. Yeah, you can. I mean, you can play it with up to 10 people, or you can play it solo. And you're basically just this Viking that the idea is that you get dropped off in, what is it? Like underneath the world tree, and Odin is like, go forth and make this world, you know, habitable. And, so you just do a lot of like, it's the D&D loop. Basically you're like, you know, you build, you're sort of building your castle as you go. So it's like got the, sort of the end game of D&D as part of the whole loop. But yeah, you're just like building your little fortification, and then you go and you raid a little dungeon, and you're, you know, fighting off monsters and things like that. And you're getting stuff, and you know, I think a lot of the mechanics are like, you know, if you decide to hold a torch in one hand, that means that you can't hold a shield in that hand. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. That I like that. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Sure.
It's, encumbrance is a big deal in it. You have to like move if you get like a bunch of like mined material, you can't take it through like the portals you can build. You have to like sail it back from wherever you get it. And it's pretty cool.
One major flaw in my argument about Breath of the Wild is like, you can carry an infinite amount of things, and also you can teleport, which in my opinion ruins the game. Like if I had to redo that game, I would make it so you could only teleport to towers. You couldn't teleport to, shrines, and that would make horses a lot more valuable. So it's not a perfect comparison, but I think it does scratch that specific itch of what's out there.
Yeah.
Let's go see what's out there. You know,
what's out there, and the open-ended problem solving is a big part of it too. It's like being able to like solve your problems in your preferred method, I think is pretty
important. Yeah. So, I mean, again, that's a pretty obvious answer. I would make video games more like the OSR experience, and I would play them.
Right. And there's always like anime dateable characters that you can give gifts
see,
to.
See, I knew you really weren't going to take this seriously, but
I am, man.
Yeah.
I think that's what we both like about video games.
There is some discomforting. Yeah. That whole universe, I sometimes I'll go through the like new games in Switch on the Switch store with my son.
Don't do that. The new games on the Switch store is a
It's almost like Steam in there now. Yeah, it's like I don't know what Nintendo's doing. Like it's just the H games are out of control. It's a lot of
what do you call them? Say it again.
H games, hentai games.
Oh, H is short for hentai in this case. They're not all hentai though. Some of them are those stupid dating sims.
Yeah, just like sort of shovelware.
Yeah,
but like absolutely dating shovelware. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, let's move on to the main review. Let's. This is enough of this.
Let's go ahead.
Sorry for rambling. I feel like I rambled a lot in that one. It's one of those things that I haven't quite gotten my head around.
That's what editing is for, man. That's
we can snip that and make a not an after show. It'll be middle show. It'll be a new spinoff. The Between Two Cairns, middle of the show.
The metal,
show
the
happens
meta
in the
of
middle
this.
Of the show, Between Two Cairns.
For today's Gamer Blast from the past, we are going to be talking about Dungeon Module B4, The Lost City. This came out in 1982. It is written by Tom Moldvay, edited by Harold Johnson and John Pickens, developed by Tom Moldvay and John Pickens. The art is Jim Holloway, Harry Quinn, Stephen D. Sullivan. There's no credits on the maps in there. I'm guessing it's Tom Moldvay. It was published by TSR, and I have the letter print-on-demand copy from Drive-Thru. It's 34 pages long. Oh, and this is for basic D&D levels 1 through 3. Now, I couldn't find out, is that Jim Holloway doing the cover?
I was trying to figure this out also. I think
so. It doesn't say anywhere unless I missed it.
No, and there's like the artist is credited. Yeah, there's like three artists credited here, and all of them sort of look like Jim Holloway to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my second,
I feel like the color choices of the cover do a real disservice to that cover art. I think the purple background really washes out that.
Yeah, because I actually really like the cover of this one.
I think it's not bad, but I think purple on.
Hold yours up for a second. Can I just see like what
you got a much lighter print.
Yeah, the original purple is a better purple, I think, for complementing the actual.
Yes,
piece.
I think the color matching on the print on demand is a lot darker and doesn't really pop. But I think if instead of the purple background, if we use the yellow that you use from this masked dude's crown as the background, I think that would really make all of the accents here pop a lot more.
Oh, I'm into that. Yeah, that's cool.
I was thinking about like throwing this in Affinity Photo and like playing with this a little bit because I feel like the purple background, it's not popping for me.
Do you guys have the back cover too on yours?
Yeah, the back cover, that is H. Joseph Quinn, which is not, to my knowledge, credited in here. Let me see.
Yeah, I don't think he did. Wait, hold on.
I like that dwarf just getting out of there.
No, he is. Sorry. That is Harry Quinn. That's Harry Quinn.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes sense. All right.
Harry Quinn. That's what they call him. Gary Harry. We used to call him that around the TSR boardroom.
Okay. That's the information. Do you want to tell us what this module is all about? Actually, I think we do a historical analysis first. Yeah, go ahead.
You got some factoids?
Yeah, I got a couple of factoids. This is the last Moldvay from his initial TSR employment. This is the last thing that he made, and then he only came back once more to write Twilight Calling a few years later. And then the other thing I thought was kind of interesting is John Pickens is credited with development on this. And so I did a little bit of research on John Pickens, and he was the acquisitions.
Yeah, we used to call him Long John Pickens. That's what we used to call him. Anyway, go on.
Well, he was apparently known as the go-to research guy at TSR. And
really tall also. That's why we used to call him Long John.
Well, he could reach all the research materials on the top shelf. That's why.
What made him such a go-to for research.
Yeah, so he was the acquisitions editor. And basically, he would review modules for possible publication. So he was like, at one point, the sort of like gatekeeper of like what gets published and what doesn't. The only other thing, looking him up, like there's an article in Dragon number 10 that he wrote about, what is the actual title of it? Oh my God. It was, it's about instead of, okay, I'm pulling it up here just so that I have it accurately. Yeah, dragon number 10, and it is D&D option, Orgies Incorporated. Too Much Loot in Your Campaign by John Pickens. And essentially it's about spending money to increase your experience as opposed to getting experience by getting money. So the idea is that you gather your treasure, but you don't actually get your experience points until you spend your treasure on a number of different things, which I think is an extremely, like, that's the kind of thing that, like, you know, the OSR takes a lot of credit for, like, sort of figuring out later on. But this is like, you know, they have it in terms of, like, you know, you can do philanthropy, research, clan hoarding, sacrifices, or orgies. And then he has, there's like some great stuff here, like Appendix 2, Effects of an Orgy on Psionic Powers. So you can just go ahead and check out Dragon number 10 for some interesting downtime activity stuff. In terms of the rest of this module, Lost City has appeared in a lot of different things. After the fact, it was in something called, there was a return to it called The Mask of Dreams in Dungeon 142, January 2007, that does sort of like...
Was that for 3E or what?
Yeah, it was 2007. I think at that point, it was 3. Yet? No, it wouldn't have been 4 yet. 4 was 2008. Yeah, 3.5, 3-ish, that zone, which is kind of cool. It's got some really good Michael Kaluta art in it, like really nice. I cannot stress enough. I really like that art. Open Design made a version of Lost City in like 2011. Goodman Games has done a Lost City thing in 2020. That's like one of their collection things. Yeah, but it's one of the Moldvay, you know, the trifecta of his pulp things.
Yeah.
Can I just read the section from Dragon number 10 referring to orgies just for a second? Okay.
Yeah.
So I happen to have these. Now, I would never suggest anyone do anything illegal, but it just so happens that you can read them all on archive.org for free for some reason. I don't really understand how that's possible, but they are there. I'm not telling you to download them just to put your eyes on the screen. It says, orgies. Fighting men, excluding rangers and paladins. Why would rangers not be able to have orgies?
It's because the original rangers were very much more paladin-like. They were like Aragorn just woods style. Paladins.
Because Aragorn could have orgies. Anyways.
I don't think so.
Lusty indulgence in wine, women, and song. Maximum expenditure is 500 gold pieces per level per night, 250 gold pieces if recuperating, and under 50%. A player may orgy continuously as many days as he has constitution points, but then must rest for as many days as he has orgied. I didn't know you could use the word orgy in that way.
I like the past tense, of the verb orgy. That's orgied.
I'm
all orgied out, man.
Yeah, that is absurd.
For 3 days have we orgied. My constitution score demands I rest.
For as many days as I orgied, divided by 2 plus 6.
I, the fighting man, must rest for 3 days, for I have orgied for 3 days.
Insert picture of the dwarf that Jim Halloway keeps drawing in this module.
That guy has such a big head.
I love it. He's
got such a big head.
Dwarves with a big head. I'm super into that choice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's classic like Star Wars problem where you got all these aliens with huge heads and everyone's wearing a crew neck shirt. And it's once you see it, you can't stop seeing it. It's like, how are we getting this shirt on? Anyway.
Can I add one more thing about this orgy situation? In that same Dungeon Magazine, there's an article called Let There Be a Method to Your Madness. And it's a good article about figuring out like what a dungeon should be for. Mm-hmm. But it does something kind of weird. So the first paragraph goes like this. When designing a dungeon, before you begin madly scattering chutes, monsters, and secret doors, take a moment to figure out what it's all for. If you are postulating a world with any sort of realism at all, and here's where I'm going to stop, the word realism is in quotes, and it is spelled R-E-A-L-I-Z-M.
Whoa.
Okay.
Is that a...
Surprise Z.
Yeah, that's very...
That's very weird.
It's a choice.
Yeah, it's interesting. That sounds like, I don't know, like an Outcast record or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like realism.
Aquemini and realism.
The gorillas.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very 2007.
I love it.
Anyhow, all right. Let's get off that. Okay, so do you feel like you've explained enough backstory?
Historically, yeah, it's just right in the pocket, I think, for Moldvay's work, right at the end, tail of the pocket. And
Brad, why don't you tell us about what is this adventure about?
I'm going to, I think, go into deep dive territory in regards to plot, but I think when we start talking about specific rooms and encounters, that's when we should deep dive. Does that sound okay?
Yes.
So Lost City, this is an introductory adventure. The premise here is that player characters are part of a desert caravan. They get separated from their caravan in a sandstorm. They are out of water and food, and they come across a large step pyramid. The step pyramid has these three statues of gods on the top of it. And they quickly find there is a secret door into this pyramid. Lo and behold, it is populated. There, this was the top of an ancient civilization. This is a pyramid emerging. The city once flourished in this region, and it is now collapsed. It's kind of very shades of like Melnibonet kind of these people lost in their own dreams and indulgences. They once worshipped these three gods, and now they worship an evil monster called Zargon, and they have kind of just kind of turned to chaos and madness, and the city has largely fallen, but it's still there. There is still a city underground under this pyramid is the ancient city. So players are delving down. They're going to meet factions. The factions are aligned with these gods, and they're trying to restore some sense of order to their fallen people. But there are plenty of these cultists of Zargon and dreaming denizens of the Lost City, and I'm there to explore. It's a 10-level dungeon. The first five levels are, I'd say, detailed with the expected amount of keying and detail, and then the second five are very quickly summarized. There's a lot of like extra work you have to do to get those to be runnable. It's really just like a list of monsters and treasure in each room without any kind of rhyme or reason to any of it. And then a very loosely sketched out city itself. Yeah.
There's one other thing is there's a portrait in each of those rooms, which
a portrait.
That's the one thing is like a tarot card essentially of like this weird rooms.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Why don't we just start with you, Sam? What did you think of this module?
I think this is a really interesting module in terms of a beginner module. I like this module. I will just begin by saying I'm a fan of it. I like the trappings of it, you know, pyramid in the desert, lost city, you know, all of these like weird ancient peoples running around doing weird stuff. I really enjoy the trappings of that. I think you, in order to play this module properly, I think you have to like really get in the headspace of it, because it's going to be a weird sort of like contradictory like thing to show up in your caravan goes missing in the desert, and like the initial it feels like the initial thrust of this adventure is like this pyramid is the only thing there, maybe there'll be like something we can eat or drink in there, and like we can get like weather the storm from inside. And then it turns into this sort of classical like D&D dungeon crawl, let's get the treasure kind of stuff that feels like there might be a little bit of a disconnect for players if they're like not just sort of dungeon brained and like going in with dungeon brain. But I think there's actually a lot of really cool sort of like campaign adjacent, like story stuff that you could be doing. I don't know if it's organized exactly the way that I would want it to be in order for that to go anywhere, but I like a lot. I like the factions a lot. I think they're very fun and sort of like got a lot of like sort of weird flavor to them. There's definitely room for like adding to that. And I think it's got a lot of traps, which is kind of cool. And the traps, at least as I recall when I read it, they don't feel super unfair to me in the way that sometimes the old D&D traps feel unfair. Like there's some of them are a little on the random side, but it feels like there was a lot of attention paid to like signaling where the traps are and like that there's going to be something or like a little bit of forgiveness. And maybe that's just because it's an introductory module, but like a little bit of forgiveness of things. So it's like, it's not the most damaging thing right away, but you do have to like, it like forces you to like act, which is kind of cool. Yeah. And then there's this picture of this dwarf that's just like smiling and giving a thumbs up, like just like has permeated my whole life. Like there's this great picture on page 11 of like a dwarf basically posing for a picture in front of these two big statues. It just looks like somebody's like took a picture of me. He's just like, yeah, visiting Synecdoche. Very cool. Loved it here.
What is the deal with that picture?
It's so good. It's so iconic.
Especially because the next picture of him is him being surprised by a like white coming out, white.
Yeah, he's coming like, out of a crypt. He's like
if every image was just him in a different like postcard like situation, I would love it so much more.
Right?
Just like this dwarf.
That'd be great if like the first room too, you find like a magic item that's just like a Polaroid camera too, so players can capture their memories along the way. These
I really like that. That's a very Zelda thing to do, is to like have just like put a camera into a game that it has no business being in.
Definitely.
Yeah, There's some little details in this that I really like. I think it can be a little bit disjointed at times in its tone, but I don't know. I'm a sucker for Moldvay and the way that he, you know, captures the essence of like pulpiness, as we've talked about in the past. I think this is a much stronger module overall than Castle Amber. If I was recommending like proper old school modules for people to try and run, this would be higher on the list than I think it'd be closer to like N1 for me in terms of like,
are you serious?
Yeah.
You think this is closer to, okay, I'll just wait.
I mean, more so than like Castle Amber. That's like,
I'll just wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I agree that it's much better than Castle Amber, but, okay. Just continue.
Yeah. I don't know how much more I have to say. I like when we get into the expanded adventure stuff. Not so much I think
how dare you? N1? I'm still mad about that. That's the best one.
N1's not
ever reviewed.
It's
so
fun.
Good. It's no, fun. It is. It has. No, it's good. Okay.
Would you like to do your rebuttal now?
Not a rebuttal. I just don't think you can. Okay.
I'm not saying that it's as good. I'm just saying like in the list of the ones that we've reviewed, it's closer to that than it is to Amber.
Okay. Or, I agree with that. I agree.
You know,
with that.
This is honestly, if this, I feel like there's a lot of, Caverns of Thracia in this module. Hmm. And I think Caverns of Thracia does some parts of this better. And I think there is expanded material in this that would probably improve something like Caverns of Thracia. And it feels like we never really got a real collaboration.
Factions. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like we never got the collaboration between Moldvay and Jacques that like
could have happened.
Like, really, that could have happened. Yeah. Cause like Silver Princess doesn't, that's not Jacques. Sorry. What was I thinking of?
Did they ever work together? I mean,
I don't know.
Directly?
I don't know if they, they did, but it feels like there's like, I'm just like seeing like the possibilities of like things.
So, okay. All right. I need to go now. Okay. So, this is set in Mystara, right? Did we say that? This is a Mystara base. Okay. All right. So it occurs to me that a module called The Lost City would have, I don't know, more than one page dedicated to the titular city, but I do think if you ignore the title and if you called it the Desert Pyramid or something, I would be maybe a little more, I would be kinder. That said, I think the faction play in this is stellar. I think it's really, really good. I don't think there is quite enough support, and I think there's actually a kind of dwindling, diminishing returns. Yeah, there's a kind of a diminishing returns that happens over the course of this module, where the room descriptions get smaller and smaller and less thought out, and then by the end they're just like, here's some paragraphs of what the city is like. You know, the city that the module is named after is it's one page with like 18 quote unquote paragraphs, some as long as one sentence, to give you what the city is like. And that is just ridiculous. And I know it's kind of deep divey, but it needs to be said. There's just no support in there at all. What this really is a multi-level pyramid, four of which are somewhat fleshed out. The fifth one is not that interesting and has kind of a disappointing big bad evil guy at the end. So I would call this half an adventure with really good faction support. Decent monsters. Like, there is this silly monsters are waiting in rooms to attack you thing. Like, there's one in particular where the blink will automatically attack any persons who go in the room. It's like, okay, come on.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, they do explain why sturges and bees can live here. They escape through holes. And like, they do actually explain that. The weirdest thing about this adventure are the, well, okay, I guess the weirdest thing are the factions, but even weirder than the factions are the citizens who live here, the Synodiceans, how do you say them? Because they're perpetually like out of their minds. Like, they're always partying and they wear masks, except for the ones who are in factions and cults. Those ones are not, for some reason, drunk all the time. How are these people still alive? Like, you'd think they would be easy pickings for all the monsters in the dungeon, but there's just like, you walk in a room and there's a party going on and they're drunkenly stumbling into each other, but they don't actually see each other or you. They're seeing some fantasy. That's just very weird and not supported very well. Like, I don't know if my players running this or going through it, they would try to help them, but there's no organic way to do that in this. It just doesn't really make any sense.
I disagree, because I think you could, if you, even the sparse amount that we get about the city, there's like food and stuff that's, and like everything grown in the city. It's like the city, it's like they take the time to explain at least how it sustains itself. I assume that there was some amount of like interplay between the people that were in the pyramid and the city itself. Like, that's where they're getting whatever food they get, if they're stealing it or if they're just going down and eating it.
What I meant is, how do they survive if they're constantly just hallucinating? Like, how are they not picked off by the monsters that live here? The giant weasels or whatever.
Oh.
Like, I just don't, that's what I mean. It's like, it's,
yeah,
there's a point, there's like a party. I didn't mean like, what do they eat? I meant, how do they
make it
not get killed? Yeah.
There's not very many of them, so I assume lots of them have gotten killed.
There's enough to have parties, but yeah, maybe. I know that they're picked off for the cult, but it doesn't seem like it'd be very hard. There's also, like, I was a little confused about the maps. Like, the exits between levels are on the map, but they're not really described in the text very much. And also, there is this point where, I see this is the problem, we should just go to deep dive for it, but one last thing. There's this line. I want to tell you to tell me if there's any historical context here. On page 8, any character killed by the bite of a giant vampire bat must save versus spells or become undead, an undead creature 24 hours after death. Can you save after you're dead?
Oh, sure. You don't want to become a vampire, do you?
So you're dead and you save versus spells. I'm just asking. That's a thing?
Yeah, why not?
I can see doing it, but I don't think I've heard of it before. This might be something that I just like haven't read my monster manual very carefully, but
yeah, is your corpse strong enough to not come back as a vampire?
I get it. You know? Okay.
Yeah.
The last thing was
I might roll it when people like when the character died.
Yeah.
Just to like know like ahead of time. Yeah.
Yeah,
like, sure. Okay, is this gonna be a plot point that I bring up later as opposed to
right. Sure.
Yeah.
There is this nice quote, the dungeon master may also weaken, strengthen, or otherwise change the suggested encounters to give the players a fair and exciting adventure. Once again,
yeah,
putting to bed this notion that people in the OSR think they're rediscovering an old style of play. No, it was never unbalanced. It was never combat as war. They were always adjusting stuff for the experience of the players. So just, that's a new thing. Stop saying it's an old thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I'm sure it existed at some point before as well, but it's not like it's not like the OSR is recreating this experience, because this experience goes against that entire playstyle. So, or at least that aspect of it. So that's my take. Brad, what about you?
Yeah. I understand why this is a classic. I see the appeal here. I think for like modern readers, if there are things that annoy you and you find difficult about old modules, this isn't going to change your mind about that. I think this very much treats an adventure module like a kit, like some assembly required, whereas a lot of modern modules do not. It's like a script ready for the stage. So there is some effort required here. There are some vexing decisions here that challenge me. But I don't know, there is a very appealing quality to this. I just love that, you know, this hook is just brings you to the temple. And the only thing that really compels you to keep going is like the mystery of what else is there. I think that's interesting. And like this like strange civilization that lives here with their masks and their like obsession with dreams, I think is really compelling. I think there is some really great dungeon design here. I think the pace and the flow is excellent. I really like this step pyramid as dungeon design, in that, especially for an introductory adventure, by nature, the scope of the dungeon keeps getting wider. Like the top floor is very small. The one you go in next is a little bit bigger, you know, but it's still like really easy to just find every part, every room of it. And every level you go down gets bigger and bigger. Like it's really training you about like mapping and dungeon complexity. You know, there's like a level with a lot of undead, and that one is really all about risk reward. Every room here is like, okay, this looks freaky. Is it worth going into the thing that's definitely dangerous? Like, do we see evidence of treasure being here? This really isn't a dungeon that is meant to be completed 100%. Like, you go in every room. This is very much like pick your battles, test what's here, see what's worth it. The factions, I agree, are very, very interesting. I always wish there was a little bit more, a little more design, like about their goals and about their interactions with each other. I get that they could be antagonistic towards each other, but these three factions represent like the people of the city that want to try to like break away from these old destructive ways. It seems weird that they're not collaborating more. Like they seem antagonistic against each other by design, especially because they all live on the same floor, and like one of them is like a boy club and one of them is a girl club. Like, you guys want to like advance your civilization, but you've just like split off into boys versus girls. Like, you've got some basic problems with your decision making here, folks.
Sounds sort of like modern political factions, if you ask me, but
hey-o. Nevertheless, like there's like compelling enough content here that makes me want to fill in those blanks. Like, how do we get from there to here to there? Like, I want to define these. I want to build conflicts. Like, I want to like build these out. Yeah, it kind of sucks me in. Like, I get it. Like you mentioned, the yokai, I'm kind of vexed by like the way to traverse floor to floor is not obvious very often. And especially for the factions, like this is like deep dive territory. But if you ally with any of these factions, they're like, cool, we got to go down to the city to get our extra robes because we keep them in the city. But it's like, dude, there is no safe way to do that. You have to run past like three rooms of living statues and wolves and like giant bugs. And like, what are you talking about? Like, there is no way to traverse this place safely.
You'd think they'd have higher requirements for new people, but instead they're like, literally, their requirement is that you walked in the room. Uh-huh. and then they're like, "What? You just stepped in the room. You want to join? We'll send, you know, this red shirt over here down into the deeps. He'll be back in a few weeks." And
please,
dead.
That's only if you roll favorably on 2d6. All right, this isn't just happening. There is a random element at play.
it's like I like that there are like sentient, non-evil factions here. I like that they can pull you deeper into the interactions of the dungeon. I wish that they had a more defined place in this dungeon, because it seems really at odds with the design of the dungeon that they've got to like sprint through a couple floors of undead and living statues to get you a robe and a mask. Like, dudes, there's got to be a better way. What are we doing?
There's robes and masks just on all these costume party people, you know. So do you feel like you got these factions and they interact with each other? And in my mind, there's enough to create a kind of emergent narrative there. Like, it's enough. I think Moldvay is a good writer. I don't get bored. I don't glaze over. However, I don't find enough encounter support in the individual rooms to make the factions interesting. Like, I mean, so no, not interesting, because they are interesting. It's like they're two different adventures. It's like he wrote these factions and then he wrote these rooms and they're just not related except for in a few key areas. Mm-hmm. I just felt like, I don't know, I maybe underwhelmed, and which is, you know what? I was coming off pretty upset over his last module we reviewed. So I was not coming from a positive area, and I still ended up really loving the lore, loving these factions and appreciating them for what they are, especially for the time that this came out. I'm not saying I don't like, this is really good faction stuff.
Yeah.
But I just don't, I just think the dungeon's not very good. You know, that's what it comes down to.
Like, I'm challenged by it. I mean, especially once we get to around floor four or so, it gets to be just a lot of monster in a room, monster in a room, monster in a room. Like, I feel like we lose the balance. Like, the first few levels, I think, do a really good job of breaking that up, where we've got NPCs, we've got traps, we've got just etc. to noodle around with. And by the time we get to like level 4-5, it's like terrible monster after terrible monster. It's just like the variety, we kind of lose some of that variety, and it gets worse the deeper you go.
I think
it becomes extreme, and that's not a thrill for me. There's a lot of this that is very like alluring and enticing, but the monster parties of like level 5 and lower are they're just going to be overwhelming, and I just kind of start losing the appeal.
Before I forget, what did you guys think of the Ye Fast Pack page? Page 30, where you get these like fast packs, these little...
I love
it's
that.
Great.
I've
it's
used
great.
Fast I think before.
One of my biggest complaints with old school D&D is... You know, people are like, it's so fast to make characters. I'm like, yeah, until you go shopping and people are like, how many silver points for a candle? I can't afford a whistle. Like, yeah. So the fact that we've got fast packs to be like, yeah, I'm taking pack B right now. Like, perfect. Like, the game needed that.
I was a little confused because pack A has 5 gold pieces just in it. So does it come with money? I don't understand.
Yeah, that's right. Money's a resource. You can, you know.
But it has a cost.
Spend it in the dungeon.
No. It says cost 38 gold pieces, but you get 5 gold pieces.
Yeah, I think that is factored in, because if you look at the next one, it's 32.
No, but the next one doesn't come with gold pieces.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, it's a little arbitrary. maybe it's a currency that you can't really spend.
Real quick tangent here in our discussion. So do you guys know what ye means? Like, ye fast pack? Do you guys know what that means, the ye part?
I assume Kanye West has something to do with it.
So the English language used to have the thorn letter for TH in it. And when typewriters came, or not typewriters, when the printing press came out, they didn't have a way to do, they didn't have a thorn. So they used Y in place of a thorn.
Why not just make an extra glyph on the printing press? Like, you just invented it.
I was going to say, it's like, it's all... movable pieces.
Lazy. Talk to Gutenberg, okay? Don't talk to me. Anyways, so they came up with what they started using Y. Eventually, TH just went away, or thorn went away and became TH. So whenever you see ye old shop, it just means the. it's so less interesting now. The fast pack.
That's weird.
Yeah. So that's just your etymology for the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yes, there we go.
I apologize, but I thought that might be interesting to some of our listeners. So there it is.
I bet you're probably right. There are maybe at least one listener that liked that. And,
no, possibly. Jesse Abelman will like it, because he likes language stuff. All right?
Like Jesse already knew about that.
Definitely.
I like that because I knew it, not because you told me.
Yeah, well, that's true. Okay, let's deep dive this adventure starting now.
Deep dive.
Spoilers.
Okay, so what is there even a point to say what's really going on? I don't think there is.
I mean,
not really. I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty there's well this established
dude.
In the
there's yeah. this yeah. The lore tells you everything you didn't know. Also, I disagree with you, Brad. There is a reason to explore this place. It's that there's nothing else to do because you're caught in the desert and you. It's like the biggest like this is the men in a tavern. This is like the inverse of that where you have no choices. It's just you just were caught in a sandstorm. What do you do if someone dies, like one of your player characters, if they die?
Oh, they say
you
that
pull from a faction.
Go ahead.
Well, it just says that there's like other people from like the caravan that also got lost. That like, oh, one of them just stumbled in, or yeah,
yeah, got it. Yeah, I remember that. I agree that the traps are better. What do you call it?
I think they're good.
Yeah, they're better that at giving you a chance. I don't like that you walk in the room with the bees and they attack. That's just not interesting to me. There are some other aspects of that that are
interesting. Well, they're killer bees, so.
Yes, well, yes. Well, here's something fascinating. All of the, like, there's a bunch of shape-shifting, you know, types, like foxes and rats and stuff. Why are they wearing the masks of the creatures they turn into? Like, why would they do that?
Because they're fans. You gotta, you know.
Yeah, it does feel like a hat on a hat, kind of.
Yeah, it's very, very silly. Do you guys feel like a module called The Lost City should have a lost city in it? I'm just wondering for the purposes of this review.
Lost city. Listen,
it's just not as well fleshed out.
The map is cool.
I agree. I think that's the interesting thing here.
I love the map. It reminds me of that Munkau map from Reach of the Roach God. You know, it's like an underground city.
I know what you mean. So yeah, everyone, all this lost city, they worship this guy Zargon now, who they believe to be a god. He's really just a monster down in the bottom of the dungeon.
It looks like the Cyclops from the seventh voyage of Sinbad combined with a tentacle beast.
Yeah, with tentacles.
And he's got a door where his second set of abs ends.
Oh yeah. And he's got a horn that lets him regenerate, and you got to destroy the horn in a volcano if you really want to kill him. That's sweet.
Yeah, there's a whole Lord of the Rings inserted into this.
Yeah, I like the list of ideas about like plots you can do in the last. Like, you know, it starts very detailed. Like, as an introductory adventure, great. This tells you exactly how to start it. You get five full floors of like, here's how to run it, and then it really zooms out, and it's like, well, here's a city. You know, do
yeah. Well, it has stuff like rock bridges. Two natural rock arches form bridges across the water-filled chasm. They look sturdy. I actually don't mind like this approach, one page with a bunch of bullets. I don't mind that. But for the titular city, I feel like there should have been more going on. That's all.
Yeah, it does feel like maybe the teaser of the Lost City is like something that isn't fleshed out as much as it could be. And it does. I agree that like calling it like Pyramid in the Desert or something like that would definitely be more accurate to the meat of the content. I think it's really trying to push this idea that a lot of these old modules, I think, are sort of doing, whether or not they're expressly doing it, of like, this is guidelines. And then from there, this is how you build. They're trying to teach you how to play the game. And I still believe that the core of the game is you make shit up. And so like a lot of this is like, I think just sort of teaching you how to like giving you sort of prompts for things and like, okay. And like they go so far as like, you know, the big thing at the end is like, there's like all of these like further adventures, which these aren't like amazing. Some of them are okay. But I like that they contextualize, like, here's like how you could run a larger campaign here, at least in brief. And then like, it's your job to spend the time, you know, figuring that out. But
I'm fine with that. It's just, they have this awesome map of the underground city and it's the name of the module and you get one page of it. That's all. Also, it's this diminishing returns where you start out getting really detailed and interesting rooms. Here's my guess. This is not the intended version of this module by Tom Moldvay. Like I feel like he did this awesome pyramid, and then they said, hey, you know what would be really cool if you like made this into a full module with like some factions and made a backstory And then he thought, well, I don't want to like get back into this and write a whole other room by room description. I'm just going to put up like some ideas. I think if you released a module today called The Lost City that had all these cool levels in a pyramid that got less and less interesting as they went, and then had a single page at the end that detailed the city, I think people would be like, well, that's disappointing. So that's all I'm saying is it's just disappointing.
Yeah. I think it bumped up against page count restrictions, you know, 32 totally. Pages, yeah. 10. We got 10 levels of a dungeon and a city. Like, that's a lot for 32 pages.
Take out that that section, that fifth chapter or whatever.
It really doesn't need to be there. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Just take the Zorgon or whatever and stick him in level 4 and then make the city. I think he'd be fine. Okay. Can I say, though, this is my least hated Tom Moulton. And we've read two. So
it's true. I think the one left that we should really, well, there's a couple I think that we should do, but Isle of Dread is the next.
That's what I want to do next. Isle of Dread. Yeah. That's my next pick.
I wouldn't say next, cause that would be three mold bays in a row. Thank you very much. But,
yeah, that's right. We're deep in the trilogy. You got to keep going, man.
But nope.
There is something I think there is, I can see arguments both for and against, like, you know, doing like an author's, like a collection of an author's works to like really be able to compare them to one another. But that's to something we can talk about later.
Here's the thing I think is interesting about this. We were talking about religion on the Discord, religion in games, and like how we like to have gods and deities in the world. So this game gives us these three ancient deities worshipped by the city here, the people, and that's the factions are aligned with each deity. There's like Gorm the warrior, there's Usama Garas, which is like the thief wizard, and then I'm forgetting one, Madarua, it's like the woman warrior. Anyway, yeah. Okay, cool. So we're learning, and the first thing we see in this dungeon, we see these statues of these gods. So we're learning, okay, there are gods here. But right away, you go in the dungeon and you find a ladder that goes up into the statues and like controls for like operating them to make it look like they're alive, and like fireworks to make it look like. So it's like right away, you're showing us that these gods are maybe not real, because we have all these very Wizard of Oz manipulations to trick people into the gods are real. But then one floor later, we meet factions who are all about, these gods are real and we worship them, and these gods are the reasons why we are not like, you know, in this death Zargon cult or whatever, which is like really at odds to me. I mean, these guys have to know that there's a bunch of fireworks and like stuff a floor up that's meant to make your gods look fake. So like, what's the story, you know? And like, maybe that's the interesting bit that I'm missing. It's like, that's the point. Like, the other denizens of the Lost City are so lost in dreams. They're like lost in this fantasy. So maybe like the fact that these guys are aligned with gods that they know aren't real, it's like this like sober like realism of like there's nothing. And that's what we're like different aspects of godlessness is like the true cult of Gorm.
You could make an argument, I think, that because the people of Synodicia are all like have like surrendered themselves over to Zargon and are this like, now they're in this sort of death cult that like maybe these factions are all sort of their main disagreement is just like, well, we have to get them on board with a different god because we have to supplant, you know, one false god with another false god. At least this one will like put people in more of like a productive place so that we can like get them back on the mushroom farm or whatever. Yeah.
That's an interesting take, is that it was like, it's like a concession. I mean, I was thinking about that too, with like one side of the floor is the god of like manly strength and the other side is the god of woman strength. I'm like, come on, this is like summer camp, dude. You guys are meeting in the middle and you're going to be necking in the, you know, like in the stock rooms. Like, this isn't
that actually, I love, you know, that there's like, maybe there's like a lot of like sort of, because there's not that many people really here.
Yeah.
And so like there's this weird sort of like, ooh, we're mad at each other. Anytime there's like political faction stuff like that, or like it just rings so true to me because people are that's like what people are like, right? That's like, you know, you're signed on to like, you could divide these people into like, you know, this is the Joe Rogan faction. This is the... This is the David Bowie appreciators faction.
Yeah.
It's just like there's a certain amount of like, you know, people are just kind of like this in a sort of mostly unsatisfying way.
I did appreciate that some of the factions were legitimately good people and some were not.
There's like some, I don't know. There's like some sad fatalism here too. Like the one, like Usama Garis, I think is like obsessed with the stars and the constellations, but they never go outside. They just look at tapestries of constellations. I'm like, guys, go two floors up. It's so sad. You are like living in this prison you've created. Like, get out of.
And yet they have no problem going to get those robes and masks from.
Right. Well, that's what's. They know down. Is down.
They know down. Yeah. They know down. Yeah.
I don't like. I feel like I could go deep and really like build out these peoples in these weird. Like, isn't it weird? And like, yes, that is weird. Like, go farther. Like, that is weird. Like, why is that weird? You know.
Right. And I'm fine with him leaving that up to us. I am. I just felt like it was. The hard work of a module is it's different for every person, but I would like to have seen more interesting situations. That's all.
Yeah.
I think that's
fair. I would have liked some built-in scripted conflicts or, you know, like why are these guys at odds? Like, give me a reason, like why Gorm and Madurua.
Well, one or all for women, except unless you're a lesser member.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know. Just a little bit more. I don't know, hooks, you know, give me a reason why I would want to sign with one of these guys over the other. Like, I just, they're so neutral. It's a kit, you know, you have to do some assembly and it can be challenging.
Yeah. It does feel like it would be really nice if there was more, in the realm of like, even if it was just like, these are the goals of this cult specifically in terms of like, not even like a clock to put on it, but like, these are like, this is what they're attempting to do. Like, even if it's all the cults are just like trying to gather as many members as possible.
Right.
For their cause so that they can overtake the other ones and then like lead a, you know, a charge into like, you know, kill Zargon and retake the city. Like that would be, you know, something.
I feel like that's kind of where was missing for me is that there just wasn't enough. There's all these factions in the above levels and I feel like they should have distinct goals with respect to taking over the city that then connect the city back to them. And maybe that's the kind of disconnect I was feeling. I think it's really cool that it had distinct factions. And I think there's enough here. This is a playable system, a playable module.
It's playable. I think there's something special about this. And I see online why some people are like, I just have my whole campaign as the Lost City. We've been playing this for months. And I'm like, I get it. You could do that. It's a big dungeon.
I'm sure that person is iterating. You know, the one thing that came to mind is I recently read an article called The Monsters Don't Know What They're Doing. And it's by this former military guy who now is a role player or whatever. And he was saying that it never made sense to him that monsters are just kind of waiting in rooms. Because when he was in the military, that's never what the enemy would do. They would never just wait in rooms. They were always, they had their own goals, their own plans. They were trying to do something. I feel like there's a prism here or there's a spectrum where you're going to have those giant killer bees or whatever. Yeah. They're going to be hanging out because that's what they do. They hang out and then they kind of pollinate, I guess, something out in the world. Actually killer bees, I think don't really pollinate, I think they pollinate, but they don't produce honey anyways. But then there should have been more interesting things going on. Like, I think there was one point where there was just like a bunch of undead dudes in a room. So, you know, just waiting. You walk in. Oh, we got you. Oh, before I forget, what is the deal with the tombs where the two ghosts are walking around? And they're both, I guess the tomb is sealed off and yet it's not because you can just get there. You guys know what I'm talking about? It's like page 26 or something.
Yeah. Hold on.
It's basically like you see the last king and queen of the city and they're kind of like warning you away. And then it says that the tombs are sealed and there's traps in every room. But I feel like it's very underdeveloped. I didn't really understand why was it sealed and was it sealed? Because it doesn't seem like it's sealed. There's no text there that says you can't enter. There's a place you can go to. I was very confused by that. Maybe I missed something, but.
There's like a false tomb and then there's.
Yeah, it's not secret. That one. I like that one. I like the false tomb.
Okay. Yeah. Sealed Tomb, which
well, it's not called that. It's like on page 26. Sorry,
I mean they have their own wing, which is hidden behind secret doors.
Yeah, kind of, it's got a bunch of traps in every corner.
Yeah, yeah, and there's all those like ceiling blocks have already crashed down.
Oh, yeah,
it's a false tomb. So yeah, it's
yeah, that's
it's, well, it's not. I mean, it's been looted already too. So
right, like, so it's not sealed though. You can get right. to it. But it says this has been sealed. That's like the last sentence there. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm going by memory here. I didn't actually.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
Well, all right. Do you guys have anything you want to add? Are we good?
Are you have any intimate connection?
I think the mask of dreams that dungeon thing is actually a really good intimate connection. Basically, the story is that like there's this like rich noble woman in the city who. Has captured some Synodicians and is like showing them off in her like crazy rich person like banquet hall. And so like she's just like, look, I found these, you know, people in the desert, and the Synodicians are like, we're kind of like dreamed out, but like one of the cleric poisons all of the drinks. And so like all the people at the party become like dreamy, like Synodician style people too. And then there's this whole thing, which is kind of cool, is like that's sort of like a connection outside of like, you know, oh, my caravan got lost. But yeah, I don't know. It's
yeah.
I think it's sort of one of the things that's nice about this is its detached nature, where it's like really easy to just sort of plop it into a desert somewhere.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. I was so, the more I read this, the more I was kind of drawn to these native Synodicians who are obsessed with dreams and just lost in a dream world. They seem like kind of like these tragic figures. And I like that the deeper you get, the dreamier it gets too. And they're lost, you know, the city. I don't know. It seems this kind of like sad abandoned place. I wanted to connect it with more dreamy stuff. I was thinking about Through Alton's Door.
Oh, about, yeah.
Like, this dream world, Zion or Zion. I don't know Zion. How you actually pronounce that.
I think it's like Cyan, but with a Z.
Yeah. Zion. I don't know. You gotta ask Ben. So I'm like thinking, how can I connect these? And I'm working out like maybe the Synodicians are kind of like something happened and like the door to Zion is like down in Zion or whatever is down like in the lost city. Like it's this like point of light that you can kind of move into this world. And the people that are in the dungeon are like something happened. They're like exiles. They can't go back, you know, and they're just like lost in dreams trying to recapture like the glory of getting into this dream world, you know, but they're like, they're barred. They just can't get back in. And that's why they're these kind of like tragic figures like lost here, you know? So yeah, maybe PCs can like get in into this dream world if they keep going in the dream into the lost city. You like make that a door into Through Alton's Door. Like maybe that door is still there too, but that's just like a way they can get out of it. You know,
I like
what I mean?
That. Like, that's cool.
Yeah,
but it's like the lost city is like really this gateway into this dream world, and like once you get there, you know, maybe like I would even like change the player characters themselves, like and like increase their stats, give them like ESP power, like show them like in this dream world, like it is better. It is like you don't want to leave this place. You know what I mean? And have this kind of alluring, like you want to be in this dream
world. Eyes of the Overworld. It's like that Jack Vance story.
Yeah,
you know, with like the contact lenses. You read it for a podcast, Brad?
I didn't read that one. I read it.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, that's unfortunate. You read the cudgel. Clever one.
So anyway, I would try to stitch together some Ben L Through Alton's Door stuff into this one. I think there could be some juicy connections here.
Sorry, this cycling back quickly. How did you guys feel about the ghost possession? Like,
I love that. I thought that was terrific.
I thought that was a really, really cool, like, oh, there's like actually like a quest line within here, which is kind of a cool thing.
It's the worst art in the whole thing, but I did enjoy that. Like you take the player aside and say like, this is what you're actually a possessed like dude. And you're actually like not even in that much trouble because once he gets what he wants, he'll leave. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So for those playing at home, there's an encounter where a ghost tries to possess one of the player characters. If it's successful, you take the player aside and you tell them, hey, you're possessed by a ghost now. And it's like, You're also like a level six cleric.
Yeah.
So you get a bunch of spells, and this ghost really wants to kill his brother, and you know where the brother is. And so that becomes this like thing that drives the player now. Like, you have to go find your brother. He's over here on this side of the dungeon. You know how to get there. Go there and do that. I thought that was great. I thought that was very, very cool.
Yeah, I'm cool with it. All right. Well, this has been Between Two Cairns. You can find us at betweentwocairns@gmail.com and at Patreon at patreon.com/betweentwocairns. Thank you to Bobby McKelver for the music and Direct Sun for the deep dive bumper. Thank you to Sam for coming on again. You can find Sam's stuff where, Sam?
Betterlegends.com, or I have an Instagram page as well. I just got rid of my Blue Sky because I don't like Twitter style websites. I just can't do it.
The Blue Sky man, come on.
I tried and I was just like, you know, I'm starting to like find myself in the same headspace that I was when I was like on Twitter, which is like, yeah, I'm constantly looking at it and like,
yeah,
resisting, right, posting like, as much, but it's just
no,
like,
I mean, I don't know how easy it is for you, but I found that just not having social media on your phone is a huge
but that would be nice.
I see. For me, it's like I sit at my desk and draw, and then in between drawings, I like, you know, like click around all the websites and everything. So I'm on Instagram. That one's
website
shitty on desktop, so it's easier to not look at.
Got it. Yeah, no, it's like for instance, Reddit. I don't have a Reddit app, but I will go check it on my phone because it's so annoying to use that I'm only gonna like when I check it. It's like no, I'm just here because of one specific. I got, you know, an email alert that says someone asked me a question or something.
Yeah, no, that's a really smart way of doing it, honestly.
Just don't have the app.
Making it specifically uncomfortable to
Between two Cairns, and we hate the internet. And it sucks. The websites are dumb. Content is
honestly
bad.
Websites are cool, but
content.
Like,
what is that?
But it's,
give me a break.
It's not even websites
anymore.
Pictures, it's like
people. It's video. Stop.
It's
being,
like Walmart.
Stop being weird.
It's like, okay, we've got like Walmart websites now, you know? It's like one-stop shopping for your internet experience. Like,
come
that's
on,
what
man.
Large-scale social media is.
Yeah. Internet's bad. Cool. So sweet. Thanks a lot. You know, Sam, and I think this is a great point actually to pivot real quick for a round of, that's right, America's fastest growing game show. So hot or so
son
not.
Of a
are you ready to play, yes, Sam?
Yes.
Are you ready to play Yochai?
Give it to me.
Just get it over with.
Well, away we go. So hot or so not. And Sam, the rules of the game.
Yeah.
Let me explain. I'm going to read out a list of things. If you think they're so hot, you say so hot. If you think they're so not, you say so not. Do you understand how to play?
I do.
Great. Let's get started. First thing, weird dice shapes. Non-standard dice. D5, D16, the D14, the D24. What do you think about weird dice shapes, Sam?
So
like
not.
Them? So not.
I don't like, I actually don't even like any, I like D6s.
Wow.
I like
being
able to steal dice from other board games. And I consistently keep being like, I need to buy a D30 because I have those D30 sandbox companion books, which are great books, but like,
they're cool.
It's really annoying to not have, it's like I have to open to like a virtual dice roller and I hate those. So,
okay. Well, you could just take a D6 and have it for the tens place and then a D10.
This is the kind of thing that I end up doing. It's
stupid.
You know, it ends up getting dumb. Yeah.
What about the 2D6 instead of a D20 as a resolution mechanic? Do you like 2D6 instead of 1D20?
Yeah, I like anything that gives you a curve. I think a curve is better
because
you can assess, you can functionally build a better situation out of a curve than you can out of pure randomness.
Whoa, that's spicy. What about rockabilly, Sam? Do you like rockabilly?
Yeah, I got
like
really
rockabilly.
I like rockabilly. You ever see that movie Six String Samurai?
No, I haven't seen that.
It's about
Is
this
that Jim
like
Jarmusch?
No, but it's about this like Elvis like character. No, it's Elvis has died, and there's this like sort of like rockabilly style character. Like look, that looks kind of like Buddy Holly. That's like, he's got like a hollow.
Is this a Thai film?
No, it's American. It's set in Las Vegas, like in the desert, in this like sort of pseudo apocalypse. And the idea is that like this guy is going to go and become the new king of Las Vegas now that Elvis is dead, and he's got this sword strapped to a guitar, and then he like fights death and like all of these like wasteland gangs. It's sick, but the red Elvises do all the music for it.
Okay, so are you saying so hot with rockabilly?
Yeah, so hot. Yeah. So hot.
Wow. Okay, what about Psycho Billy? What about Psycho Billy, Sam?
Yeah, I think in the Billy genre, I think is cool.
You're a Billy boy.
I'm a Billy boy at heart. I like stupid haircuts and throwback music sort of experiences.
Sweet.
And if you mix that with acid, then great, whatever.
You a Psycho Billy guy, Yochai? You like Psycho Billy? Like checker prints?
You ever listened to Watashi Zombie? Have I mentioned them before?
Sounds vaguely familiar.
They have Japanese. The answer is no, I don't like it. And also,
you think so not.
So not. Also, how long is this going to go on for?
Because, just fade me out. Just fade me out. We're going to keep going. No. What about role-playing chase scenes in role-playing games? Chase scenes. You like the mechanics of a chase scene?
They're never as exciting as...
So not.
I'm going to say so not because, you know what, the ideal chase scene would be like the chase scene in Ong Bak. And I feel you just can't make a chase scene that's cool like that. And you can describe it. That's the kind of thing I might actually just like say, everyone at the table, just describe the next part of this. And like, you know, we'll just sort of figure out, cause it's like, you could roll dice at the beginning. It's like, do you catch them or not? And then describe the whole thing.
Ooh, Ong Bak chase. I saw that by myself and I was hooting and I was jumping off the couch, hooting and hollering.
The movie is
sick. I was
sick.
Like, woo, what? Wahoo! I was Super Mario.
Sector B-13 is the other one with really good chase scenes. That parkour movie.
These are very similar films.
What about Burning Incense? Is that so hot or so not? Do you like Burning Incense?
It's so hot. I was raised by hippies, so yes,
You like Burning Incense. You like Burning Incense.
Yeah, we do more candles now, but like, you know.
Yeah, there's a incense candle pipeline, I think, isn't there?
Yeah. I think candles are incense for adults. And then I think you may, like, once you become like a long gray-haired hippie, you go back to incense.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, that's enough of that. Thanks for...
I could do that for literally
forever.
What
about the Moosewood restaurant, Sam? Moosewood restaurant. They got the soups there, right?
It's Moosewood. Moosewood is fine. It's a little overrated. They got the cookbook. They've had that cookbook forever. I've eaten there a couple of times. Though. Yeah, their soups are pretty good. There's better restaurants in this city, though, I got to say.
Ah, that's a spicy take. That's a spicy regional take.
Okay. No, stop it. Stop.
Wow. Good fried pickles.
Okay, we're ending this. Goodbye. Everyone say bye now.
Bye now.
Bye now.
God, finally.